I'm Peter.
And I'm Felice.
Welcome to our travel podcast. We're specialist travel writers, and we've spent half a lifetime exploring every corner of the world.
So we want to share with you some of our extraordinary experiences and the amazing people we've met along the way.
This week we're in North Wales talking to Claire Copeman, who with her husband Jim runs Adventure Tours UK, a travel company that features all the outdoor pursuits that you can enjoy in the wilds of Snowdonia and elsewhere. That's trail running, coasteering, kayaking, river bugging, canyoning, zipwire, hiking, and a whole host of activities that visitors from other countries simply don't realise that you can do in the UK. When they got married, Claire gave up her marketing job across the border in England, and the couple decided to try and bring the world of adventure to Wales. It all began with mountain biking.
I was late to mountain biking, actually. I started when I was about 28. I stumbled upon a mountain bike centre on a visit to Wales one day. And little did I know that several years later, I would end up marrying the owner of the mountain bike centre.
So that's what brought you to Wales. That's why you stayed in Wales anyway.
It is, exactly, yes. I took up mountain biking. I was coming here every weekend. I was always out in the hills in my spare time. And yes, I got to know, or met my husband through it, got to know him. And eventually, a few years later, we got together. And yeah, I moved to Wales to join him. It made far more sense than him moving over the border to England where I was. You know, I could travel for my career, but his career is fairly fixed in the hills here in North Wales. And I was coming here every weekend anyway to enjoy it. So yeah, it was the right move for us, and I've never looked back.
And then you started Adventure Tours UK together.
We did, yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
It was a number of strange coincidences, I guess. It stemmed really from our wedding, actually, is where it all began with Adventure Tours UK, and friends of ours visiting from Denmark for the wedding. And we took them out whilst they were here to explore around Wales and show them the area. And they were blown away by it. And it made us stop and think actually about where we live and how incredibly beautiful it is. But it also made us think how little people know about Wales. They, both those Danes, had lived and worked in England. They travelled in Scotland, but they didn't know Wales existed. And that made us stop and think. So at the time, I was actually having a bit of a tough time in my career in marketing. And I had taken the opportunity at the same time as I was getting married, I took the opportunity to take voluntary redundancy. So there was some fairly large life changes happening at that time. And then this seed was planted for we should do adventure holidays in Wales. And I started to mull that over and think, that sounds fantastic, actually. Why not?
How many people come to Wales next to the whole of the UK? Is it a big percentage?
No, it's not. It's really not, actually. And that's one of the key stats that I found when I was researching the business and thinking about whether we should set up and was there an opportunity, was there a demand for it? We found some data from Visit Britain which showed that in 2018, there was around 38 million international visitors into the UK. But of those, only 2% made it to Wales, which I just found absolutely astonishing. Wales deserves so much more representation than that. And it's something that we really want to change if we can.
And the idea was to bring in incoming tourists from other countries and give them a holiday in Wales. Not British tourists at this stage.
Absolutely. That's right. We really viewed it as an inbound tour operator, as I now know it's called. But yeah, we basically wanted to shine a light on Wales and the UK as a whole, really, as an adventure destination, because we have always experienced mountain biking, trail running, hiking, surfing, all these different activities that we do here. And we know that the UK is brilliant for them. Yes, we like to go abroad on holidays and do them. But actually, we spend the other 50 weeks of the year doing them here in the UK. And we realised that other people around the world didn't see the UK in that light or see Wales in that light. They thought about coming here to go to cities, to go sightseeing, to go to Premiership football matches, all the things that I don't find particularly interesting about the UK, if I'm honest. And I think there's far more that can be done here. So, yes, we wanted to bring the world to Wales and show people what it's really all about.
So how did you publicise this?
So the first thing we did was obviously we created the brand. We created our website. We launched our website back in December 2018. So only around 2.5 years ago. From there, then we started to build our social media profiles through Instagram and through Facebook. We did some online advertising as well. And we used our connections in Denmark to actually get the ball rolling. So our friends in Denmark were helping us to reach travel agents in Denmark and to their friends and to magazines. So we actually very much started targeting a Scandinavian audience, really.
So how does it work? Do you organise accommodation or just the sports that people do?
Everything. I hate the phrase package holiday, but essentially it is an adventure package. We look after everything for people. So it is the accommodation, it's the transport, it's the activities, and it's the guides as well. People can just come to us and book everything in one place. Most of what we do are small group tours, which are perfect for solo travellers to book on, but we get couples and families booking on them as well, actually. But most things are groups of between 6 and 15 people at most, with lots of individuals booking onto them. And it's a really nice way for people to not just try new activities and explore the area, but to meet new people as well. And we do family breaks too, but most of it is people booking onto these small group tours.
And at the beginning, did you get lots of different nationalities?
Mostly Scandinavia. As I say, we were really talking to Denmark and Sweden quite heavily. And then we started to notice that a lot of Americans were starting to get in touch with us, and Canadians as well. So early 2020 was our first year of things really starting to pick up. And we had inquiries from all over the world. We had Dutch people coming on our trail running camps. We had Belgians getting in touch about hiking holidays. And yeah, Canadians joining us for an epic mountain experience. It was really exciting having all these people from around the world wanting to come and visit little old Wales.
And just for the moment, your domestic market only.
Absolutely. Like many people in travel, we've had to change quite significantly what we do. The core of what we do remains true to what we set out to achieve. But now, instead of talking to the world, we're now talking to the UK. We're talking to people who live here in Great Britain and who are looking to travel closer to home now.
And hopefully in the future, other people will come as well from other countries again.
Absolutely. And I think certainly next year onwards, that will start to return very quickly. Even this year, potentially, we already have some people from North America who've booked onto trips later this year. So some people are being very optimistic about it, which is great. Hopefully that optimism is well placed and we can all share it. But yeah, for now, mostly British people and kind of international, I think, probably from next year onwards.
So do people do one sport for the whole week, or do they vary, have different things every day? How does that work?
We do a real mix of trips. So we have multi-activity trips, which is where people join us for 5 to 8 days and they do a whole variety of experiences. So the Adventure North Wales is our 8-day flagship trip, if you like. It's a fantastic experience and people get to try a whole range of things. So we take them out canyoning, coasteering, we do river bugging, we take them hiking through Snowdonia, we go kayaking with them as well. We spend the night in an off-grid bunkhouse, so most of the accommodation is beautiful four-star boutique hotels, but we'll have often, you know, one night in really unique accommodation to add to the experience. And then we also do things like our trail running camp, which is one activity, it's all about the trail running.
Is trail running something you do yourself?
It is, yes. I love trail running, actually. Although I'm a mountain biker at heart, several years ago, my old dog became very poorly and lost his leg, unfortunately. So he couldn't come mountain biking with me any longer. So he still was very active and wanted to get out there. So I found that running was a pace he could keep up with. So he's the reason I started trail running. And instead of mountain biking together, we would hit the trails running together instead.
And where do you do the trail running?
All over. I'm very lucky with where I live here in northeast Wales. We live on the edge of what's called the Clwydian Range, which is a beautiful hill range. It's all limestone outcrops and heather-clad moors. So I'm very lucky that I can run from my front door and experience some amazing wild trails. Or I can drive to nearby Snowdonia and run through the mountains there. So I'm lucky that I can have a lot of options from home.
So when people come trail running, do you send them a list of things that they need, or do you provide those things?
Everybody that books on any trip gets a full kit list. So usually about 3 to 4 weeks before their trip, we'll send out the full kit list so they know exactly what they need to prepare for their trip. It gives them time to buy anything if they don't already have it, and we can make recommendations for what they need.
Now, I know about trail running, but run me through the other sports you mentioned, because I don't know what all of those are. Co-steering, what's that?
So co-steering was born here in Wales. It's actually from South Wales originally, but it's basically traversing around the cliffs on the coast where you leap into the sea, you swim across small inlets, you climb the rocks out the other side. And it's basically climbing and scrambling and jumping into the sea. It's just a very fun way of travelling around the coastline.
I imagine in Wales, and indeed for all the other sports, you need a wetsuit most of the year.
Yes, it is advised, definitely. And actually not just because of the temperature. Actually, obviously, when you're bouncing around in the waves next to rocks, it's good for protection as well on your body. But absolutely, you'd be brave to go in without a wetsuit.
And then what were the other sports you mentioned?
Canyoning was one of them, which is quite similar to co-steering in many ways, but it's done inland in a river gorge. So that's where you use the natural formation of the river gorge. Waterfalls, for example, sliding down waterfalls, jumping off rocks into plunge pools, finding little kind of narrow gaps to slide through. So it's really following the course of the river through a canyon.
And then there was something bugging. I didn't catch what that was.
River bugging. This is a one that nobody's ever heard of. It's a fairly new sport. It's only available in a handful of places around the world, actually. It's almost like having a small individual inflatable raft, and you lie face down on that raft and you have these giant neoprene gloves, a little bit like baseball gloves. So it's like you have webbed hands and you use your hands to paddle. Basically, you paddle down the river and you take on small rapids and little waterfalls and drops on your individual canoe. It's just fantastic fun.
So do any of these things have dangers?
I think there's an element of risk with any kind of active outdoor sport like these. But obviously, everything we do is all about the safety. Everything is, you know, it's all about the guides that we work with. It's the standard of the equipment. It's making sure that we brief people correctly so they understand what to expect and, you know, how to get themselves out of trouble if they do find themselves in it. But everything is very well managed. So, yes, there is an intrinsic element of risk, but actually the reality of any kind of accidents happening is so slim because it's so well managed.
And you've had a few accidents yourself, I think.
I have in my personal sporting life, yes. Thankfully not in my work life, but yes, I've definitely had a few bumps and scrapes out running and out riding my bike over the years. Myself and Jim, my husband, we decided to enter an event together. He was always going off doing mountain bike events, and I was quite envious of him doing that. And I thought, you know what? I can do this as well. Let's enter something together. So we did. So I spent months and months training for this huge coast to coast from Whitehaven all the way across to Scarborough, 3 days of mountain biking and camping in between. And on day two, just after lunch, maybe I was a bit delirious from my cheese sandwich, we set off on our bikes again, and Jim was off ahead of me, so I tried to catch up, and I obviously rode a little faster than I perhaps should have done, and before I knew it, the handlebars spun out of my hand, and I went over the bars, and I landed in a heap on the trail, and felt very sorry for myself as Jim came rushing back to my rescue, and we realised that actually I'd hurt myself quite badly. So we probably spent a good hour or so on the trail side as he tried to clean me up and bandage my arm and got me back on my bike. I carried on. I made it all the way to the end. It was about another 50 kilometers that day to get to the end. I saw the medics back at the event campsite, and they took one look at my arm and said, absolutely no, we can't help with that. You need to go to the hospital. So they sent me to the hospital down the road, where I spent the rest of the evening getting cleaned up and stitched and bandaged and told to take care of myself. And I thought, well, yes, I will do, but I've got one more day of the event left to go. So the next morning I woke up in my tent feeling cold and stiff and very sore and very sorry for myself, but determined that I was going to finish this race. So I did the remaining 90 kilometres of cross-country riding on a mountain bike. And there is a wonderful photo of me at the end looking absolutely ghastly white, holding an ice cream and a medal that I'd earned for my efforts.
I think there are some similarities between Snowdonia and Iceland. Can you tell me about those?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I was very lucky to go to Iceland a couple of years ago. Actually, before we launched this business, we went to Iceland on just a short trip one winter. We went in sort of late February time. It was beautiful. We'd wanted to go for such a long time, and finally we had the opportunity, and it was amazing. But we did find ourselves looking at, you know, these heather-clad moors and these mountains and the bilberry bushes all over the place and thinking, this is so similar to back home. It really is. I mean, Iceland's an absolutely incredible place. But, you know, when we came back home, I remember, I think it was about a week later, we were driving along the Ogwen Valley in Snowdonia. And we just thought, you don't need to go all the way to Iceland and places like that. We do have these incredible wild spaces right here on our own doorstep. But Iceland is famous for it. Wales is not. And that's what we want to change.
It's also a little bit less expensive in Wales than it is in Iceland.
I think anywhere is a little less expensive than Iceland, isn't it? Wonderful country. But we were racking up. I remember the first day we had a flight of beer between us and some fish and chips and realised we'd already spent almost £100 and had a slight panic about what was in store for the rest of our stay.
And I think you had some really bad weather when you were in Iceland.
As we stayed there over the few days, the temperature dropped and the wind was howling. And I remember, you know, driving along and seeing all the magnificent waterfalls that Iceland is so famous for. And I've never seen a waterfall travel upwards into the sky, but it seemed every waterfall we saw was either at 90 degrees out or it was heading, you know, straight up into the sky. It was amazing to see.
Incredible. And of course, there are volcanoes there that aren't in Wales.
Well, this is true. Although if you go back far enough in history, Wales was incredibly volcanic. So Snowdonia itself is formed by volcanoes from over 60 million years ago. If you go to Anglesey, the island off the very north of Wales, that has remnants of volcanic activity. So actually, Wales does have a very strong history of volcanoes. So they might not be active at the moment, but they are here if you look hard enough.
And going back to your trips, what happens if people turn up with all the wrong kit? Can they still carry on?
We do everything that we can do to make sure that people turn up with the right kit and they understand what's expected of them, because it's very important to ensure their safety and their enjoyment. If you don't turn up with good waterproofs and we're out in the rain all day in the mountains, you're simply not going to enjoy it. But if you have the right kit and you're warm and you're dry, you'll love it. Likewise, if it's a boiling hot day, but you've forgotten your sun cream or a sun hat or your water bottle, all of those things, they either make or break your day.
And presumably footwear is really important.
Footwear is really important, actually, yes, especially if you're out all day hiking. Having good, sturdy, comfortable boots is an absolute must. And again, ideally waterproof. It doesn't always rain here, I must say, but we do always have to prepare for the worst. And it doesn't matter whether it's December or August that you're travelling in. We all know what the UK is like. We need to be prepared for all eventualities. But if people don't turn up with the right kit, we probably have bits and pieces we might be able to lend them ourselves. And there's plenty of outdoor shops around here, so there's always places we can recommend where they can go and pick up any bits they might have forgotten to pack.
So how does a typical day go?
That varies hugely. It really depends what that trip is. On any trip, we tend to have people arriving that afternoon. So usually the afternoon would be welcoming everybody. So for example, our Wild Wellness Retreat is one of our favourite trips that we do. And we host that at a glamping site. So the first afternoon, usually from about 4 o'clock onwards, people will be arriving at the accommodation. We're there to welcome them and to get them checked in and get them settled into what will be their home for the next few days. And then usually early evening, around 6 o'clock, we'll sit down with everybody with the guide. And the guide, whether that's myself or one of our team, will welcome them and introduce them to each other. So it's important everybody starts to bond and to meet each other and to make friends. And we'll explain to them what to expect over the coming days. Hopefully there's no surprises because they've chosen this holiday. Hopefully they understand what they're going to do, but it's just nice to explain to everybody what to expect. And then often we'll have a welcome dinner together. So, you know, sort of early that evening after the briefing, we'll have a drink and we'll have some dinner. And as I say, on the wellness retreat, for example, after dinner, we actually take them up to a little spot where we have a campfire and we have a local storyteller come and join us. And that's a really nice way to set the scene for those few days, to have a Welsh storyteller who tells her stories in English but introduces the Welsh language and really shares some of the magical myths and legends that Wales is quite famous for.
Tell us about the wellness retreat. You said it's on a glamping site. What do people do when they're there?
The Wild Wellness Retreat is a really lovely, relaxed 4-day experience. So yes, we stay on a glamping site. So everybody's in beautiful canvas bell tents with little log fires in to keep them warm at night. And we do a nice combination of relaxing activities that help to reconnect them with nature and to an extent reconnect them with themselves as well, because you have time to just think and to relax, and it just cuts out all that everyday rush that we're also used to, of phones pinging and emails going off and sitting in traffic and having music blowing. All of that is gone and it's right back to basics. It's 4 days in a field, essentially. We start the day with yoga outdoors, so doing a wonderfully relaxing yoga session together. We then take people out stand-up paddleboarding, actually, in the afternoon on the first day, which is a lovely relaxing activity to do. The meals are all done together, so we all eat outdoors where we can. If the weather is good, if it's not, then we'll sit indoors. But all the food is locally sourced, it's freshly prepared. It's actually quite plant-based food as well, so although there is meat available, it's very much about light, clean food and just feeling we connected with the seasons, because everything that we serve is seasonal. And also one of the activities we do is foraging. So we take people out foraging and we teach them which plants are in season right now, which are edible, which also they shouldn't touch. But it's great getting people who've perhaps never tried foraging to pick leaves from a hawthorn bush and try eating them and realize actually you can eat these, to pick the berries from a hawthorn bush, for example, and you can eat those. They're not the tastiest things, I will say, but you can eat them. And it's great to see people realizing that there's this whole natural larder all around them that they never knew they could tap into. And then usually we will pick something, whatever's in season. So the last wellness retreats we did were in September and sloes were everywhere. So we picked lots and lots of sloes and we took them back to our camp, and everybody made their own bottle of sloe gin to take away with them. And loads of people have tried sloe gin before, and you know, they've bought it in the supermarket, but they've never picked their own sloe berries and made it into gin themselves, ready to enjoy at Christmas a few months later. And actually, it was lovely to get people's stories at Christmas time for people who'd been on the retreat and were now enjoying their own sloe gin that they'd made.
I'm a big fan of homemade sloe gin.
It is wonderful.
But I love the sound of the foraging. Can you cook a whole meal from things that you've picked?
You can, if you're very good at it. Yes, I would say you probably can. With some store cupboard essentials, I would say. But, you know, at the moment, wild garlic is in full season. So I'm struggling to get through an evening meal without finding somewhere to put wild garlic into it, much to my husband's dismay. I had a wild garlic Fiorentina pizza the other night, which was amazing. But you can. It's amazing how much is out there. Obviously, it's more abundant at certain times of the year than others. But all year round, there is food out there to be picked from the wild.
Do you include mushrooms in your foraging?
We tend not to eat them. We do look at them. We will show people the ones which we believe to be edible. But I must admit, we do steer away. Generally, we steer away from eating them on the courses because there is such a risk around mushrooms.
Yeah, I can see a very serious situation where you kill off all your clients there. So.
Exactly. Best avoided generally. That said, we are actually looking to work with some specialist mushroom foragers. So hopefully there will be at some point a new trip coming for into South Wales where we will be working with specialist mushroom foragers. And that's all that they do. So they know the mushrooms inside out and we will be able to try them then.
So do you run your courses all over Wales or just in the northeast?
We run all over Wales, actually. So most of what you'll find on our website currently is North Wales focused, but we have more and more coming up in South and Mid Wales. And as well as our small group tours you'll see on the website, we do tailor-made breaks for families and for groups. And with those, we have complete flexibility to work anywhere and to deliver any kind of trip that you want. So we are we're constantly growing our network of partners, because everything that we do is about working with local independent providers. We package everything together, but it's all based around working with fantastic activity providers and fantastic accommodations. And as we grow and as we establish, our network of partners is expanding. So yes, South and Mid Wales are very much an option now.
As we're very keen on Wales, and all our family holidays when our children were young were to Pembrokeshire and Cardiganshire. And the beaches are amazing, just like beaches in Cornwall, but with no one on them.
Absolutely. It is beautiful around there. And as you say, that's the lovely thing. It's so quiet. And that's actually something that we're really keen to preserve ourselves. The last thing we want to do is to encourage over-tourism in any area. So responsible travel is really important to us, so that, as you say, at the moment you can enjoy those empty beaches to yourselves, but we honestly believe that if we all time things right and we plan things properly and we work together with local communities, we can preserve that whilst also establishing Wales on that tourism map.
Well, people in England, but also in other countries, have a belief that if you're coming to England and you want to go to the seaside, you have to go to Devon and Cornwall. But that's not true at all, is it? There's some really amazing beaches in Wales, and the temperature can be fantastic. When our children were young, we went on four successive family holidays, and the temperature never dropped below about 28 degrees every day. It was absolutely amazing. We did then go one year and it didn't stop raining and it was about 12 degrees for a week.
I guess your luck has to run out at some point. But yes, you're right. There are stunning beaches around here. And obviously the temperature is ever so slightly more favourable sometimes in the south. But often actually there are some really beautiful spots all around the coast where you get these real sun traps. As I say, I think sometimes Wales is unfairly tarnished with this weather brush that it's, you know, wet and windy here. But that's because we have so many mountains in certain parts, especially around North Wales. And if you're in the shadow of those mountains or those hills, then naturally, yes, there is more rainfall. Many years ago, we used to camp very regularly over on the west coast of Wales, and we'd often drive through wet and windy Snowdonia, and we'd arrive at this tiny little campsite on the coast looking over to the Clean Peninsula. And it was just this beautiful sun trap, and we'd watch the sunset. Every time we went, we had amazing weather, and it was just perfect for watching the sunset behind the sea.
And then there's a few sheep in Wales too, aren't there?
There are indeed. I believe the statistic is that sheep outnumber people 3 to 1. It might even be 4 to 1 now, actually. There's a lot of sheep here.
We went to Powys a couple of years ago, and it was a bit like Austria.
It did rain a lot, but we actually went there in October expecting it to rain, and it didn't disappoint us.
Yeah, that is, I think, one of the most beautiful things about Wales is that it's such a small country, and yet the landscape is so varied. You know, as we talked earlier about the likeness between Iceland and parts of Wales, and then, you know, Austria and parts of Wales. And actually, the reality is, in such a small space, we have incredible, you know, imposing mountains. We have beautiful, lush green rainforests. Actually, it's Celtic rainforest that covers much of Wales. You know, we just think of it as being woodland. But actually, again, looking back to the volcanoes and that era, we have, you know, incredibly rich, lush rainforest around here. We've got incredible white sand beaches, beautiful rivers. I mean, we have every kind of landscape you could possibly want, which is why it's so incredible for adventure.
And how has living where you do made you into the person you are today?
That's a really interesting question. I've always lived in the countryside, but as I say, for around 12 years now, I've lived here in the hills of North Wales. And I think it has really connected me much, even more, to the landscape and to the seasons. I think in particular, since starting Adventure Tours UK, it's allowed me to really throw myself into that as well, because I'm no longer torn between countryside and city. I'm just purely in the countryside and loving every moment of it. And I think it's allowed me to focus on what's really, you know, the things that I really care about and what I'm really passionate about, which is outdoors, it's sustainability, it's getting people, you know, out of their comfort zone and trying something new. And I think this area has helped all of that come about for me.
So how can people find out more about your company and your different adventures?
So if you head over to our website, which is adventuretoursuk.com, on there, you'll find all of our small group adventure tours and also our contact details as well. So if you wanted to get in touch about a tailor-made holiday, we can work on that for you. And also you'll find us over on Facebook and Instagram.
Claire Copeman, thank you very much for appearing on the show. And we wish you the very best of luck with Adventure Tours UK. And hopefully you'll get lots of visitors from not just Scandinavia, but from all over the world coming back this summer and next.
Thank you so much, Peter and Felice. It's been lovely to join you today. Thank you so much.
That's all for now. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our website, actionpacktravel.com, or you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the many podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love you to sign up for our regular emails too, at peter@actionpacktravel.com. Until next week, stay safe.
And I am you.